You are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 in Davis, California. This show is called That's Life. I'm your host, Lois Richter. And today I have with me, well, another KDRT guy, right? This is Bill Buchanan. And Bill, tell us what your show is here on KDRT.
Well, my program is Davisville. And
that sounds a lot like Davis, which is the city we're in.
Well, that's by design. It's a show about Davis, although it's sort of Davis writ large. You know, one of the interesting things about Davis, and I have a journalist background, so I think about these things in terms of stories, is there's just a lot in this city, and there's a lot that this city connects to. And by city, I don't just mean City Hall, but the people in it. The university, of course, is a big part of that. Being in California is a big part of that. But started the show about fall of 2008, so almost 16 years ago now, with the idea that there's just a lot of interesting stories in Davis. Sometimes it's events, sometimes it's issues, sometimes it's people. Sometimes I will admit the connection is very, very thin. I have talked to members of, the Byrds. I liked the band The Byrds in the 60s. None of them has ever lived in Davis. But they've all played in Davis, and that was enough. And so then I could talk to them about whatever I thought was interesting in their career, but then I'll almost always toss in a Davis question. And there was a guy, Richie Furey, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, I'm a little uncertain about that. Anyway, he's played here twice, once with Buffalo Springfield, there's a band from the 60s, later with Poco. Then he was playing in Sacramento, and so I asked him on the show, I said, so you've played in Davis twice. Do you remember it? And he said, kind of. And I said, well, I found one of your reviews of your show. And then I, he sort of went, oh, boy. Well, it was a very favorable review. It was in the Aggie. I think it was when Poco played at Freeborn. You know, a lot of bands have played Freeborn. And so that was fun. But the point I'm coming around to is it localized it back to Davis. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's an influential musician in his field, but I could get a Davis angle on it by just quoting what the reaction was here in town. The fact that they played here, that tells you something about Davis, tells you a little bit about Davis's standing on the touring circuit in the 60s. Maybe a fairly obscure fact, but after a while, all these facts sort of add up and they give you a sense of the town. And so I've been doing 400 shows, or it'll be 400 shows shortly. Most of them with people who live in Davis, have worked in Davis, have some connection to Davis. And the story I love to find is the one where it moves a conversation forward. And I don't mean that ideologically, but what I mean is simply get at something that maybe you haven't heard before. And not just tripe or sensational clickbait stuff, but stuff that's genuinely interesting, something that's genuinely insightful about the town. And I can keep going on in this vein if you like, but for example, one was with Jerry Adler, not the former mayor, but she had a beauty shop in town, I think. She grew up in Davis. For a while, she gave tours of vanished Davis. And so I talked with her about what would you show people in the stories she would tell, things like that. And fascinating, I thought. And, you know, it's in the archives, actually. People can go look it up now. So that's, I love those kinds of stories. And there's so, so many of them in Davis.
Well, there's so many wherever you are. It's always amazing to me how many people connect to their neighbors and how many connect but didn't know it. You know, it's like, I'm sure you and I connect somehow that we're not aware of at this point, because both of us have lived in Davis for quite a while. And so I'm sure there's some connection. We know about KDRT, but I'm sure there's something else too. Yeah. And finding those things, I think is wonderful. One of the things I'd like to do here on That's Life is to talk to my neighbors and other folks in town and just find out, who are you? Where are you from? What are you doing? What's a dog catcher anyway? You know, so I think both of us are hitting at different parts of life in Davis. But I have a basic question for you. Yeah. Why is it called Davisville?
Because it's about Davis.
Aren't you going to tell us?
It's always a little tricky.
Aren't you going to tell us that Davisville was the original name of the town? Come on, I'm trying to get to there.
Well, it was. I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Our connection was such, I didn't hear.
So did you name your show Davisville before or after you knew that the town used to be called Davisville?
I'm sure I already knew, but it wasn't my intention because, in fact, if anything, I don't want this just to be a Remember When program. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think that's a risk. The more decades you have on this globe, things that we can find personally interesting because we lived it. A lot of people may go, yeah, okay, fine, sure, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to limit the story that way. So I knew that Davis had been called Davisville. I've heard a few reasons as to why that was dropped. Confusion with Danville, or the fact that the editor of the paper just got tired of having Ville in the name and just shortened it. This would be the very Davis Enterprise we still have, by the way, to this day. And, you know, papers used to have that kind of power. If the editor said, I'm not going to call it Ville anymore, well, at some point people might go along. But I was aware of it. But really, I wanted to have a name that just conveyed this is about Davis at some connection. Mm-hmm. And I ended up happy with the name. It's tough to name something, honestly. If anything, maybe it's a little dated because for a while, Ville was kind of a suffix of choice. Lately, it's been side, you know, Berkeley side, Oakland side, or IST, SFIST, LAIST. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the Silicon Valley. This is a digression. I grew up in the South Bay down near San Jose. And maybe it got in my blood or DNA early on because a lot of tech companies have unusual names. You know, they're coined that way. Yeah. There was the whole X phase. Xerox, not quite Ox, but Memorex, Ampex, that went away. The names have gotten a little loopier and more creative as the years have gone by, you know. But anyway, all that was sort of in the background when I thought of Davisville. And I just thought, okay, you know, this fits. This name will work for whatever I think I'm likely to do on this show. And that's the main thing is you want something that describes the show. But also, I'm always trying to think of the audience, not to pander to them, but I want people to understand where I'm coming from. And I want to deliver something useful. And, you know, if I called it Important Issues of the Day, for example, not only would that be a pompous name, it really wouldn't say anything about Davis. You know, better just something short and pithy, Davisville.
Yeah, so, I think that's a very good
title. Long answer.
Short name.
Well, I used to write, things in my past, I used to write for newspapers. I wrote articles and headlines and all that. You know, a good headline, a word that fits in a headline is golden. You know, a good word. One reason headlines used to sound so contorted is because you're trying to take a long word and render it in a short sense. Mm-hmm. And that can come off as unintentionally hilarious. Davisville has a kind count. So not that we're doing hot type anymore, but if we did, it would fit.
Mm-hmm. Golden is a good title too. Yeah. I like that one.
You know, and it could work for something else. I wouldn't use it for my own because, you know, not all the results are golden.
But you have the golden
I aim for that,
here.
But that doesn't mean I always get there.
We
do. Yeah, we do. And
we are having
it's a good show. It's
we are having a little bit of problem with the connectivity. So one of the things which listeners probably don't know is that we record this show on Zoom. We're not sitting next to each other. We're sitting in other parts of the town. And so in that recording, I'm going to get a track that is me and a track that is him. So those times when we're having that confusion or talking over each other, I'll be able to fix. So that's why you're hearing it the way you're hearing it now, because I edited this thing like crazy. Do you edit yours, Bill, or do you do it Do you do interviews in person or just do one take? Or how do you do your shows?
Well, it's evolved over the years. At first, it was always in the studio. And my brother Jim, who does live tracks at the station, is actually one of the first shows at the station ever 20 years ago, would run the soundboard, and we would just record it and then just run with it. I didn't really edit it. I didn't have time. I was working at the time. I worked at UC Davis at that point in their tech department, tech communications. So to take a show and edit it, no. But the last few years, particularly since Zoom came along, and Zoom does like to introduce Zoomisms, where suddenly a word is distorted or you get a little zap of feedback or something. So, you know, you got to take that out. And since I retired from a paid job, I freelance right now, but since I retired from that, I do have time to edit, and so I do. And I record in person when we can. I have found one consequence of the pandemic is that people are used to being able to record to do anything at any time. So the idea that someone would come in on, say, a Saturday at 11 a.m. and record at the studio, that was much more likely to happen before the pandemic than it is after. Because afterwards, people are like, hey, I'd love to talk to you, but no, I can't do Saturday. Can we do Tuesday at 3? And as you know from the station schedule, the only way that you're going to be able to record it when the studio is in use for a show is you have to record it offsite, which right. means by Zoom. That's what a lot of people are used to. Or, you know, there's other programs. But I do edit it now, and I try to take out all the ums and uhs. There's times I'm able to save myself one of my own convoluted questions where I can, as I listen back to it, I can hear that I'm working out the question in real time, which, you know, gets me at a useful place, but can be torturous and unkind to the listener. So when I can, I'll go in and try to tighten that up because I don't want to be unkind to the listener.
One of the things that I find, well, like you, I used to do all this in the studio, on air, no filters, just, you know, whatever you got, yeah, I got, and it went out on the air live. I didn't even record it. The station recorded it as it was going out. But since the pandemic, and now that we're doing this, I have found it takes me a long, 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 long time. Because I'll listen to the recording and go, I want those out of there, you know. And so I'll go through and I'll be editing and taking out this word and that word and the other word. And that's a reasonable thing to do, I think. It makes the shows much better than they were. But it does mean that how I'm recording it right now, my voice will sound different than it will next week when I'm recording somebody else. And so where you say you can take a question that's long and replace it with a short question, I find that the sound is so different when I'm recording on Zoom versus when I'm recording in my editing program that it's like, I'll try real hard not to do that. I'll have the opening and the closing. Those could be separate. That's fine. But so I think it's your setup might be more consistent than my setup if you're able to replace a question with a short one.
Well, it's more like battlefield surgery. I mean, I can only do this when contained within the long convoluted question is a better version of it that I can edit down into, because that's okay. Absolutely true. The soundscape varies, you know, day to day. So we could turn this off, turn on a Zoom session right after this one. Mm-hmm. You and I sitting the same place, same atmosphere, same everything, and it would still sound different. Mm-hmm. And so there's time, you know, you can only do so much. And this is where I had a daily background in journalism. I used to work in particularly community journalism. You have to produce a lot of copy quickly. And one of the virtues of that is it says, get it in shape that is good enough. And by good enough doesn't mean just adequate or mediocre, but you know, usable, something you can feel good about and then move on, rather than not much. And so I try to use that instinct. I think, okay, this question is too long, but I think if I take out the preamble, I worked, you know, over the years as a writer, you learn a lot from other people. Yeah. And one of the editors I learned from had this great phrase about leads in stories. And he said, a lot of times when you get a story, the first draft, you'll realize that what the writer is doing the first few paragraphs is they're sort of clearing their throat. Mm. Well, then just take that out. You don't need that in the file. You know, you have to clear your throat before you speak because no one wants to hear the garbled voice. But then take it out. You know, it's served its purpose. It's like scaffolding on a building. You don't leave it up afterwards. Take it out if you can. And, you know, to get to KDRT and doing this show, one of the things I enjoy about this is the challenge of it. I had never worked in radio till I started doing this. I had always worked in print, a variety of print jobs, writer, columnist, editor, copy editor, news editor, things like that. But I like the idea of challenging and telling a story through the voice, which is a wonderful element of, this sounds grand, but the voice is a great part of being human. You know, if the thing you can hear in a voice, the emotion, the connection that you can hear, it can convey meaning and engagement in a way that something written doesn't, because it's more two-dimensional. So I love that. But it also then in editing, it's like, okay, well, in a way, it's like you're live on stage. So if you flub that note, if you go in the wrong direction, it's there. What are you going to do about it? You know, yeah. Maybe you can fix it. Maybe you just move on.
When you're in print, you can cut out a few words and it would still make sense. Of course, in print, you can add words too. But when you're recording this, if I'm talking to you in this tone, in this voice, and I say, and this is whatever it is I'm going to say, and then a little later on, I'm a little bit more excited and my voice is a little bit different, and I say, and this is what I'm going to say. You can't cut and paste. You can't snip the lower voice to the higher voice. Here it comes out sound really weird. So I think that it's you have to be better in the instant, because you can't rehearse it. You can't redo it. Well, you can, but it's sort of silly.
Well, and that's part of the attraction, isn't it? I mean, that if someone's listening, you know, they're going to hear that you're engaged. Now, whether they like the subject, whether they like what you're saying, whether they like the line of questioning, that those are the questions. But, you know, there's nothing worse than just a dull monotone that explains, we are now going to take a closer look at the carefully nuanced questions of city finance. You know,
I'm sorry, I fell asleep about 5 minutes ago.
That's the idea. Yeah. It may have commercial value for that purpose. You know, we could do that at KDRT. We could have late night monotone.
We could have a somnambulist show. Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
We, you know, and maybe all you have to do is produce 10 minutes and put it on a loop.
Oh.
Because who would make it to minute 15?
Yeah.
Yep. And if they do, you could say, well, I'm sorry, this show can only do so much. If you make it through 15 minutes of this stuff, then, you know, you need to see a doctor. This is more than just restlessness.
Yeah. So when I have
a... Anyway, you don't want to do that during drive hour.
No. Well, you don't want to do that at all. I mean, having all you have to do is smile and you can hear it in your voice. So if you're talking on the radio, just get a grin on your face and your voice will be much nicer.
Yeah, so, although there you have to be careful, you know, and there's radioisms, right? Where people will do that, they'll fall into the DJ voice and they'll say, hey, there's lots of traffic tonight. You know, it's like, yeah. Hype is always ugly.
Yeah, but there's a difference between that and just smiling.
Oh, agreed. Anything that's sincere, I think, is, you know, now I'm going to go really far afield, but that was the appeal of a lot of punk rock, right? It was a sincere reaction to bloat. That doesn't mean it was competent, but part of the appeal was it was sincere. It was a genuine expression of the musician's view, musician, if that's what they were. But if you just did that, you know, as a pro forma thing, then it could just be as hollow and phony as anything ever created.
Yeah.
You know, authenticity is a big deal.
Yeah. When you're doing your show, and I have sympathy for you because I know how hard it is to find a guest and get them coordinated and then talk to them and then discover that it really isn't very interesting and then try to make it through anyway. So how do you go about finding guests, looking for guests, working on it? Do people just come to you and say, oh, talk to me? Or do you have to go and beat the bushes or what?
It's usually I go and beat the bushes. One of the things I learned, again, community journalism is actually good training for this because, well, I'll back up one step. It helps just to be curious. I generally like people, and I'm generally pretty curious about almost anything, to a degree anyway. So if you take the premise that a lot of us have stories that aren't necessarily visible on the surface, but could really be quite interesting. And I find them fascinating. And then you get connected in a town. And I have lived here quite a while. And part of my training as a journalist was, connect with your beat. You don't ever want to get co-opted by it. You always want to have a certain degree of detachment so that you can ask questions that you may not ask somebody if you're only a friend, you know. But there are so many stories here that I'll go out and find them. So I'll give you an example. This actually was one of my favorite interviews, and I didn't look up her name before today because it's been about 10 years. But one time I was in Armadillo Music downtown. This is not their current location, but just down the street. And they had a bulletin board up where people could look for musicians. And I saw this flyer, mimeograph flyer on the bulletin board, and it said something like, punk rock band members wanted. No pervs, weirdos, or drug addicts, or something like that. And then it said, there was a phrase, if you think Green Day is punk, I don't even want to talk to you. Well, I was intrigued. And here's the thing. There were two things that I saw in that poster, and this gets into how I choose a subject. One is, this is someone who was looking for a band member. I've seen ads like that. I'm not a musician. I don't play, but I've seen ads like that in record stores all my life. And I thought, well, did this work? You know, it's like, did she, as it turns out, find somebody? So that's question one. Question two, the thing that I think makes it a more universal subject, because maybe someone's going to think, oh, I don't care about punk music. What? So what? But we all have things that when we're young, not maybe all, many of us do, that we love, and we're not sure if they love us back. A possession, not a possession, a profession, or an artist, or something that you want to pursue. It doesn't have to be the arts, you know? It could be anything that just calls to you, but you're not sure if it's going to work, because maybe you don't have the talent. Maybe you love to play baseball, but you're not good enough to make major league. Maybe you love to act, but you're just not there. Maybe you'd love to write, but everything you do is a cliche, right? That's sort of a universal struggle in lots of ways. So I talked with her, and it ended up being a fascinating interview, I think. And I didn't know who she was. And so she's taking a chance because she doesn't know who I am, right? She gets an email out of the blue. This guy at a radio station says, hey, I want to talk to you about this. But I did want to talk about the music. I wanted to talk about what she was trying to achieve. And, you know, it just took a little initiative, a little curiosity. Let's put it that way. Curiosity is more of a neutral thing. I was curious about the story that I sensed in that flyer. And I could see in what she wrote, humor. You know, if you think Green Day is punk, I don't even want to talk to you. no pervs, weirdos, drug addicts. She was being very explicit. So that suggested to me intelligence and humor and ambition. And she's young. And this is a college town full of young, ambitious, talented people. And I thought, here's one of those stories. And so I talked with her. And as I say, it's been 10, 12 years. It was interesting. That was actually a show that got some reaction. As you know, sometimes if you do a show and you may like it, people may like it, but they won't necessarily tell you. They think, oh, I enjoyed that. And they go on to their next thing. They'll let you know when they're not happy. Well, this one, I was banking at Bank of America afterwards, you know, cashing a paycheck. It was still cashing check days. And the teller saw my name. She says, are you Bill Buchanan? And I said, yeah. And she said, I heard your show, because she was a friend of the student I talked to. I say student, young woman. Mm-hmm. And that was gratifying because I thought, okay, you know, it made a connection. Now that's the sort of a story that rarely gets told, mm-hmm. because there's not a group pushing it. There's not a PR person behind it. There's not a political agenda. There's not a big decision point. This is just someone who's starting out and wants to make her way. And she was willing enough to come in and talk about her story a bit. And there's a bit of an aside here, by the way, that I think just added to the charm of it. When she came with her boyfriend, which was fine. It was great, actually. He wasn't part of the interview, but he just came along. And it turned out he's a musician as well. He wasn't in her band. And it's not to say that he wasn't good enough. I think he probably was. It was more a question of she had such a strong vision and drive for what she wanted this band to be that they didn't want to mix the two. Mm-hmm. You know, if he was in her band, then he was going to have to answer to her vision. And I don't think he objected to that, but they had a relationship on the side. And, you know, they made the decision, apparently, let's not mix those two streams, you know, matter and antimatter. Again, what a very human response. And it all came out of this flyer on the wall and her willingness to talk about it. And of course, at the core of it, what she was trying to achieve. I love being able to get stories like that out there. So that's one example. Sometimes there's things in the news. I found it interesting a few years ago. I talked to Bill Pride a few times, Davis Community Meals, because he's frontline with homelessness. And so you could talk with him about the experience of it in town, and you would get past the people who just wanted to apply a judgment or two to homelessness and say, well, everyone knows homelessness is only this. No, 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 it's only that. And tedious and useless after a point. We've heard all that. That's what I mean about move the conversation forward. Go talk to somebody with experience. And of course, we need to do this. We talk about diversity. We need to get way beyond what we have considered to be a broad experience. There's literally an unending well of stories in Davis, and not just Davis, but overall, that I think are worth that kind of attention and engagement. And when I can pull it off, when I can do some, I'll give you one other example. You know, just a year ago, Davis went through these tragedies with David Pro being killed and the student who basically got mentally ill and went and killed two people and assaulted a woman. And so something like that happens and you think, all right, what does this mean? And so I talked with Susan Cosio, who is, among other things, she's a retired hospital chaplain. She's an ordained minister at the University Covenant Church at the time in that denomination. Very, very smart person and a lot of insight into integrating grief. And my question was, how does Davis integrate something like this into our experience of the town? Because some people will look at that and go, well, it's just sign, you know, Davis has just fallen apart. Everything's gone, you know. And other people will say, oh, no, you know, it's still, we're okay. It's like one version, neither version, I think, neither of those two versions gets into sort of the deeper human experience of something like that. Davis has had some profound tragedies in the past, and it is still Davis. And so how do you make sense of all this? And so we talked about that for half an hour. She was wonderful. She was willing to talk about it. I do think it's getting easier to do this show now over the years because I do have years and years of it. And if I contact somebody and they think, I don't know who you are, or maybe they do at this point, maybe they've heard, but they can go listen to prior shows and listen and think, okay, they get a sense of my style, they get a sense of my approach. And if they feel comfortable with it, then maybe they'll take the risk of letting a microphone be stuck in their face and, you know, recording whatever it is they happen to say that day. So that's the approach I take. Curiosity, timeliness. Sometimes I get desperate for ideas and I just think, well, is there something I can follow up from before? Yeah. Or like when I talked with the woman, the flyer, I was just, I need a show idea. And, you know, when you're looking, when you're really looking, you can find great ones sometimes because you'll look in places that aren't the usual. I do get people who pitch shows to me sometimes, and they can work. But sometimes what people want to do is say the same thing that we've all heard before. And I'm not as interested in that only because that's well covered. It's not to denigrate those points of view. It's just to say we've heard plenty of the standard views on lots of things. Mm-hmm. I want this show to be something where you can hear something a little different.
Yeah. I think that your approach to having a show is actually quite different than mine, because you're going for the topic, the story, the, you know, the flyer inspired you or the activity happened and then you're chasing it down. I tend to be walking down the street, chatting at the grocery store, meet a person, say hi, think they're very interesting, and ask them to be on my show. So I tend to pick people. Yeah. And instead of finding the background of something, I will just talk to a person and see what's going to happen. So it's I don't do research. In fact, if someone comes on the show and they're going to, like, I had a whole series of authors a couple summers ago, and I intentionally would not read their book because my audience hasn't read that book. And so I want to be asking the questions that the listener would be having if they were in the room and talking to this person. So it's a very different style than looking for facts and events and that sort of thing. And I think they're both wonderful. I think your show is a great show. But it's just, it's
Thank you.
Curious. And that's why I was asking how you came to get those. When you were in print, and which papers were you working for again?
Well, mainly it was the Daily Republic in Fairfield. I held a variety of jobs there. Started there as a police beat reporter and ended up as managing editor. And wow. Then after that, well, if I stuck around. And then I worked at the Sacramento Business Journal for about, I was at Fairfield for 18 years. I was at the Business Journal for, I think, 8 years. Started as associate editor. I ended up as editor there. And then in each place, I also wrote columns, and I was a reporter in Fairfield. And before that, I worked at the Colfax Record for a while. I worked at the Daily Cal. I freelance now for SF Gate and Trains Magazine.
So have you, when you worked for each of those, did you live in the town or did you live in Davis the whole time?
I ended up living in Davis the whole time, and that wasn't ideal for some circumstances. I will say when I started in Fairfield, well, community journalism pays very, very poorly. It always has. And when I started in Fairfield, it was, there were a lot of good people there, but it was the sort of a place you didn't necessarily expect to be there in a month. And there's a variety of reasons for that. It's not a reflection on the town. I met and got to know, still know, some people in Fairfield and Sassoon City particularly. Wonderful people, fascinating people, and great stories. But I didn't see a reason to move because I didn't think I'd be there all that long. And then, you know, the way life delivers changes. Also, I met my wife when I was traveling in Scotland. She was traveling from Seattle with her brother. We met in Edinburgh, of all places. We were staying at the same bed and breakfast, and we met over breakfast. And there was an attraction. So I had the question of, okay, it's getting serious. Where are we going to live, Seattle or down here? She's a nurse, still is a nurse, very good one. And it was easier for her to find a job here than it was for me to find a job up there. I'm at the part of the baby boom that came late. So pretty much whatever it was my year group was interested in doing was already full by the time we wanted to do it, because the older boomers got all the jobs. Coming out of Berkeley, there were people who went to work straight for the Chronicle. By the time I was graduating from Berkeley, the Chronicle was like, no.
Yeah.
So she moved down here. She was good enough to move down here, and we got married. We're still married nearly 40 years later. She said, I want to live in Davis. That's where I want to live, and of where we could live. So I stayed. And but I spent, you know, until I left the DR, I spent most of my time down there. Getting to know people in the town, things like that. And some of those, this is a bit of Davisville trivia, some of those folks have shown up on Davisville.
Uh-huh.
Like Jim DeClos, guy who is in biotechnology, very, very knowledgeable, has a fascinating story. And he was involved in with Genentech. And so some of the work that they were doing in Vacaville. Davis has a huge biotech component. And so I was able to talk with Jim about that. One, Catherine Moy, she's currently the Fairfield's mayor, but I had her on the show just last year because of this big city, California Forever, that wants to plop a brand new city in rural Solano County. Not a Davis story strictly, but it's just west of here, southwest. So I thought, okay, that's close enough. And so I talked with her about that and had her on the show. And there's been a few others over the years. So now at this point, you know, I've got roots in Davis and I'll stay. Once I was at the Business Journal, living in Davis was fine. You know, it's a big city. People there lived all over. Our editor, when I started there, lived in Placerville. The publisher at the time, Dan Kennedy, lived in Davis. So we lived all over.
Do you ever think you'll leave?
Not my intention. You know, you never know what life will do, but, no, I would change the heat. And as much as I love Davis, well, this is one of my theories about Davis, actually. One reason Davis isn't three times bigger than it is,
mm-hmm.
is because we're flat, we're very hot, and we don't have a river or a lake or anything like that. I'm not counting the ones like it's, and we do have lakes, of course, Stonegate and out east of town, but we don't have a fulsome lake. We don't have, you know, a Lexington Reservoir like in the Bay Area. We don't have their temperatures. We don't have their hills. And so people who live in Davis, by and large, really want to be here. And that has a good side and a bad side. It has a good side in that people care about the town. It has a bad side in that we can get all in each other's business all the time. And that's a lovely, charming aspect of Davis. And sometimes it's very frustrating. But, you know, I recognize it. I like it. I suppose I'm part of that now. And so I'll probably stick around, but you never know, right?
So one of my theories of why Davis is still Davis is that there's a floodplain between us and the politicians. They can't creep over here. They have to, you know, actually move. But when I've been here long, and I got here in 68, so I've been here long enough to remember before we had that bedroom community on the east side of town, when most of the people who lived in Davis worked either in Davis or in the, you know, nearby area. And now my guess is that between a quarter and a third of the households have folks commuting to Sacramento. It changed a lot of the flavor of Davis back when that got started. Not that it made Davis not Davis. It's just, it changed it a little bit.
Yeah, this reminds me of a comment. Was it Gerald Heffernan, who used to write a column for the Enterprise, talked about the development where borders used to be. I forget the proper name for that development, but you know, that's where there's the Burmese restaurant now and Makuni's and things like that. He said, when you cross the street from, say, the art gallery side to that shopping center, so you're just crossing a street. But he said, that's like you're leaving town. You're crossing from Davis out of town. And I don't really agree with him, but I thought it was an interesting way to make the point that said that as Davis grew, the way you're describing, it added things that weren't part of Davis in the 60s, the 70s. You know, Mace Ranch being part of it. Wild Horse. I live in the north part of town, you know. What's Davis about it is the green belts. What's Davis about it is sort of the building codes and things like that. But yeah, it's grown quite a bit from when it was essentially, you know, North Davis, and there was nothing north of Cavell. Imagine when you lived here, there probably wasn't, right? And maybe along F Street, north of Cavell, but I mean, not much.
Cavell wasn't there. You okay. Know where the library is, you know, that was the edge of town.
Yeah, there would have been the cannery up there, I guess. Yeah. Anyway. Oh, yeah.
Cannery was a big part of things for years and years and years. So we're getting back into the history stuff again. And, the definition of history. Anything that happened before I was born. Which means I'm 74 years old. And so that's a long time. But my friends at the Whole Earth Festival, who are the students who run it, and they're 20. So for them, most of my life is history. Yeah, exactly.
And you know, that's been part of the change in Davis and such as well. You know, we just had, you know, the Davis Enterprise laid off Bob Dunning, who had written for the paper for 55 years and written a column and won awards and things like that. And for a certain demographic in town, which is to say those of us who've been here a while, read the paper, probably in print, but you can read it online. Huge story. On campus, barely visible.
Young people, it's like, who?
Yeah. And I mean, that's that town gown split. And the fact that there are people who live in Davis now because they just like the town. They move from the Bay Area. There's a lot of people here who move from the Bay Area. I mean, I'm one of them, honestly, although I did it right out of college. There's these parts of the town now that are, we don't necessarily see each other like we used to.
Yeah.
Although this makes me think of something John Lee once said that I thought made sense. You know, John Lee used to, what's the Test of Time or something. He said, to a lot of people, Davis is their neighborhood and downtown. That's Davis to them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of a perceptive comment, because for a lot of us, it's our neighbors and neighborhood and, you know, and downtown, of course. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it is like, huh?
I would expand that a little bit to say, if you are young enough, it also includes the green belts. Because if you're riding a bike, it isn't just your neighborhood and downtown, but it's also the parks and green belts that you can get to on a bike. I haven't ridden a bike in many years. So, you know, I know the neighborhoods from old time, but not current. And, you know, one of the neatest things that I would encourage everybody into Davis to do once a year is hop on one of those double-decker buses and ride it all the way out and all the way back, then hop on a different one and ride it all the way and see what's out there. You would be amazed at, you know, as my husband says, yeah, go away for 30 years and they change everything.
One of the truisms of Davis is that it looks very different from just two or three stories up than it does from street level. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of, when you're talking about the double-decker buses, that's part of it. Just to get up in the front, and if you ride in the front of one of those buses and go down Fifth Street, go down Russell, it'll be a different experience than on your bike or walking or driving, certainly. And you can see that on campus. If you go to the top of one of the really tall buildings and then you look out over the town, you'll have a very different sense of Davis than you will when you're down in the trees, yeah. You know, when you're on the sidewalk.
Do you know what the Blue Ridge is?
Well, it's the mountains, right? West of here. If you're talking about the one out here.
Yep, I'm talking about the one out here. So I went to the top of Sproul Hall. Sproul, depends on who you are, is how you pronounce it. And there's a place there where you can look to the west and you can see this line of hills, and then there's this dip and there's a line. And it's not flat, it's, you know, it's lumpy because that's what hills are like. But that's the Blue Ridge, and that's the Berryessa Gap. And that to me is really symbolic of Davis. There's no place else that you can look at that and see that except from a tall building in Davis, because if you go any other place, it's going to be a different skyline.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that may change now. I mean, Davis is talking about building taller. There's all these developments downtown. Not that there's any skyscrapers in the work, but it doesn't take much, 7 or 8 stories. Mm-hmm. And if you did that, you know, if you had like a coffee shop up there or a lounge or a restaurant, I think people could really enjoy that, getting up there and seeing it. Go up there during a storm.
Yeah.
Go up there when it's foggy, get above the fog, you know, on those kinds of days. There's lots of...
You're dating yourself, Phil, because we don't have Thule fog much anymore. We did this year, which was a really a surprise, but there have been years when there was no Thule fog. Whereas when I got here, when you got here, you'd get up in the morning and you could drive your car going, I can't see a thing. Whereas the trucks were above the fog going zipping by you. And it's like, I can't see a thing. Yeah, Thule fog is a big deal. And it disappeared.
Well, maybe you'll be back if we have a couple of wet years. I know, 2 years ago was a pretty wet year. This last year was average. I did see when I was out walking sometimes in the morning, you know, there's some big fields.
Yeah.
And you could see just that morning mist, sort of like a mini Thule fog.
Yeah.
Very cool, very atmospheric. And that was there. So maybe we'll get more of the old.
Yeah, I have a feeling that climate change has done it in. You know, Don Shore and I do the Davis Garden Show. And so we're always talking about weather and things like that, and how things are changing and what to garden with here, and how beautiful it is. And our show, Don'll come on. We have the opening beats, and then Don'll say that this is, you know, the Davis Garden Show with Don Shore. And then I pop in and say, and Lois Richter on a bright, beautiful, sunny Davis day. And I get to say that like, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 months out of the year, because we don't have rain in the summer. So yeah, it's real surprise to people when they come here what the climate is like.
Yeah, well, and yes, climate change is going to do a number on Davis.
Not as bad as it is in other places. Our position with the valleys and the geography of it, we're not going to get the tornadoes like they get back in the Midwest and the flooding. We're actually going to, I think, be a lot more stable than a lot of places in the U.S. So, but let's not talk about downers. Let's talk about uppers.
Well, one of the things I did want to say is, because you mentioned the garden show, and I want to say, I think what you and Don do with that is a classic example of good local, you could call it journalism if you want. It's a form of, it's not news in the sense of, you know, we're going to go investigate events or something, but really, really valuable. And it's a classic example. It's a classic community journalism tactic of take a big subject, gardening, right? And then bring it on home to people so that someone listening to it, not only do they hear, I think, engaging personalities with you and with Don on that show, I think the listeners can be confident in the knowledge of it. There's a track record to it. And it's very, very aware of this climate, this location. So if someone says, well, I know the running joke is, how early do you plant your tomatoes every year? But whatever it is, the advice, the instruction, the insight, the questions, the discussion, it's all going to have roots. It sounds like a pun. I don't mean it that way. It's all going to have roots in this place. That's what's useful. And I'll go in a bit of a different direction. That's what's missing from a lot of information infrastructure these days. I think something similar is happening in politics. You know, I've read that one of the reasons politics is polarizing is because it's going national. We're much more inclined to see nuance at a local level, because you might think, you know, that member of the council just made a boneheaded decision, but I know that they're really got a lot of integrity, so I'm not going to write that person off. At a distance, that's so much easier to do, right? It's human nature to just reduce people to categories. Whatever you are, whatever you think, it's a human tendency to simplify and distort people at a distance. Up close, less so. Information, same thing.
When That's I'd work what the at internet newspaper, is doing to us too, is it's making people from long distances able to read other people's messages and not only not know who they are, but maybe not even speak the same dialect. I mean, there are phrases that can be used in one community that mean one thing, and in another community mean something totally different. And the internet doesn't allow you to filter to being local.
I think, you know, the optimist in me says we're going to figure out how to use information delivered this way. And maybe part of the search is still that human connection. And it just gets back to The Voice, and it gets back to community journalism. And in a sense, it gets back to Davisville and your show today and The Garden Show. Is if someone listens, if they discover it, sometimes that's the problem, right? I mean, who's really heard of KDRT in Davis? A fraction of the town, probably.
Thousands of people from around the world.
Around the world, yeah, because, I mean, think of the jazz show that Don does. Yeah. I mean, that has more listeners than anything, and they're all over the world. And that works that way because jazz people, I'm sure, can hear in Don's choice, and they can hear in his description that the guy knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. But locally, people can listen. So when they listen to The Garden Show, they think, okay, these people know Davis. They know that Davis doesn't get rain usually from April till October. So they're not going to hit you over the head with some stupid advice like, well, as the summer rainy season closes in, because there is none, you know, and maybe something similar has to go on with these other things. We have to get away from just the quick manipulated reaction, it's almost spasmodic. They said, what? I'm outraged.
Yeah.
You know, you don't do that as much if you have a feel for the people around you. Doesn't mean you have to approve them or even like them, but you at least know who they are, and you're going to be less likely to go to the walls with a really stupid judgment about them, because odds are you're going to know some of the nuance. But it takes more effort. You can't just take the quick quip. You have to actually spend a little time at it.
I agree. You're an optimist. Yeah.
So here's why I'm an optimist, partly. If you look back at history, it one way to look at it is it's a story of a race between idiots and heroes. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I'm using very simplistic language. Now, the danger is that an uber idiot puts out the lights for keeps, but we're still here. There have been a lot of things over the years where we could have destroyed ourselves, a variety of ways, or made things much worse even than they are. You know, there's a real strain in human nature that says we can do better, we should do better, let's try to do better. And there's a tendency for us to react more to bad news than to good news. Like we're saying earlier, you can do a good show, people go, oh, that's nice. But you do something they don't like, and they'll let you know. You know, maybe it gets back to how we evolved. We're prone to look for danger because that's a threat to our existence. And something that's pleasant, we just enjoy and then let go, probably take for granted. There's something in human nature, though, that has persisted this long. I think it's still there.
Mm-hmm. And the not reacting as strongly to the good things is, I think, because we assume that the world is going to give us good things. So it's only when something bad happens that we feel a need to do something. Because if it's good, hey, it's good. It's like people who run for city council. If everything in the city is going really well, the city council is looked at as just fine. It's only when something's wrong that people go, oh, we got to change that. Or if someone who's coming up who wants to be on the city council persuades you that something's wrong. Now, don't get me onto that. I'm not going to do politics now. But one of the things that you said struck a chord that is not that good. And that is we may not have killed off ourselves. I mean, we're still here, we're doing fine. But you know, we may have killed off other people and not know it because they're not still here and they aren't able to talk about what happened. So I am also and I think people are doing as well as they can. And I think that if given an opportunity to do better, most people will.
Yeah. I should clarify when I say we, I don't mean a particular culture or humans. Race or gender. I mean humans writ very broadly, very large, only in the sense that humans as a species, really is what I'm talking about, are still here. So by we, I don't mean us and Davis. I don't mean me. I don't mean who I am or who...
Non-Neanderthals.
Yes, that almost gets beyond my limit of knowledge of science, but I think that's what I mean. Yeah, just basically human species.
Yep, human.
And we're very destructive at the same time. So, you know, both those things are true.
Luckily, things can be almost destroyed and still recover. And we find that every day, looking at nature, looking at the garden, looking at whatever destructive thing happened, you know, you can still recover. This poor little rose outside here. I went to plant it under the redwood trees. I couldn't find room in the roots. So it's been living in a pot for 2 years, 3 years, 3 years. And this summer, the little drip line got knocked out of the pot. I didn't know that. So blithely going along, getting everything watered, doing everything fine. And this little plant was getting zip. And so when I finally did notice it, I mean, it's just sitting out in the back there. It's not something I see every day. And I did finally noticed it. And the leaves were brown and dry. And you touch them and they crackle and fall off. I'm just like, oh, my goodness, I killed my plant. But I took all those brown leaves off. I watered that pot really thoroughly, and then I put the drip back in. So from now on, it'll be okay. And you know what? There are tiny little leaves coming out on all those bare twigs. It'll recover. It'll be fine. It'll, well, take care of itself.
Yeah, things don't always end in tragedy.
And you have been listening to KDRT LP 95.7 in Davis, California. This is Lois Richter. The show is That's Life. And my guest today has been Bill Buchanan. Bill, thank you so much for joining me. I had a really good time talking with you. I hope you did too.
I did, Lois, and thank you very much. I was glad to do it.
You are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 here in Davis, California.